Sony has announced that the PS5 is doing better than anyone expected, but live service games are not. Plus, Nintendo has forbid a charity marathon from featuring its games this year. Tonight is August 10th, 2025, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is Edwin Akeriper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why it's not because they hate the fans, it's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
There we go. There's no, like, take two of any of this. Or anything. It's not like that. Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwolf. If you are joining us live here on the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, welcome. Thank you so much for being here. We do try to tape the show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us and interact with the show directly. But if you can't be here live, I completely understand. This is all done in completely one take. We never have any restarts or anything like that. But that's because you listen to this on a podcast. And you can join us on our Discord server, vognetwork.com/discord. And you can join us there throughout the week and talk about talk back about anything, as well as bring up stories that you may want to hear on the show here. Yeah, thank you so much for being here. Let's go ahead and get into some of the news. It's kind of it's kind of interesting. We're not no real movement on the big topic we've been talking about for the past couple of weeks, the itch.io Steam versus payment processors. I do know that people are still calling the payment processors and still raising a ruckus. I don't think there's been any more movement on that. So So let's go ahead and get into the next part of the news here. So let's talk about Sony. We haven't talked about Sony for a little bit, and I know there was a Nintendo Direct and or an Indie Direct, and there was a game that was hidden in a sizzle reel that I'll probably talk about in the second half of the show. It's in the unscripted part, but I played it. I even played a little bit online, on stream. I actually streamed it. Got away from the Yakuza for a little bit, but let's talk about Sony. Kotaku reports that Sony's latest financial results are in, and the PlayStation 5 is doing better than anyone expected. Despite a woeful lack of new games exclusive to the PlayStation console, this is Kotaku editorializing a little bit, people won't stop buying the device, with another 2.5 million units bought between April and June of 2025. That's slightly better than it sold during the same period last year and brings the lifetime total to 80.3 million units. The recent rumors have suggested that the Xbox Series line of consoles may have only sold 30 million in the same time. And they launched like 2 days apart from each other. I can't remember which one was first. I think Xbox was Tuesday and PlayStation was Thursday. They were 2 days apart in late November of 2020. Sony did have other big numbers to boast about. The PlayStation Network currently has 123 million active users, up 7 million from the same time last year. Meanwhile, 65.9 million PS4 and PS5 games were sold in April to June's Q1, up 12 million on 2024. Although it's notable that only 6.9 million of those were first-party titles. Nintendo did sell 6 million copies of Mario Kart World alone in a single month for a brand new console with no previously established user base. So keep that in mind. Sony only sold 6.9 million first-party titles total out of all of them. So this means that the PS5 is performing pretty much exactly as well as the PS4 and PS3 before it, all of which should make Sony delighted. The machines sold during times of financial recovery, while the PlayStation 5, the PS3 and PS4 sold during times of financial recovery, while the PlayStation 5 launched in the midst of global catastrophe. COVID was at its peak, while supply chain issues and chip shortages meant the machines couldn't fill shelves until months or maybe a year or two until after the official launch. Sony has multiple revenue sources across music, movies, and technology with $17.8 billion in sales across all of its divisions in Q1, slightly up on last year. Movies alone reporting $2.3 billion, but gaming had over $6.3 billion, making the sector worth almost triple that of movies to the Japanese corporation. So this is also a little bit probably why Microsoft is like, we're going to release games on PlayStation, because if the Xbox Series consoles only has 30 million, now there's a whole bunch more Windows game systems out there that is also an Xbox. I can see why they're going to be releasing on PlayStation, because that's, 80 million more units that you can target. So, I guess congrats to PlayStation, I guess. We thought it would do well. And Sony was really the only, I guess what I'll say about this is that Sony is really the only console or company that's actually playing the console wars, where they're trying to make the best machine with the best horsepower to play games. Microsoft is not playing the console war. They're trying to play the format war. They're trying to play the ecosystem war with Xbox. That's the war that they're fighting. Nintendo is not really playing the console war. They're just playing the game, the best games war is what they're looking for. So Sony's really the only one playing the console war, and of course they're going to win it because that's what they were going for. And a lot of people that I know that have both an Xbox and a PlayStation, they'll be like, well, I buy more games on PlayStation. I actually buy more on Xbox personally, but that's because I can also play those on Windows. I can play them on PC if I wanted to. So like, it's easier to stream from my PC than it is to lug my Xbox Series X up to where I stream. And so I tend to do that, and also Game Pass. I have Xbox Game Pass Ultimate. I don't have PlayStation Plus Premium. I have the basic PlayStation Plus that allows me to play with friends. I'm not surprised, though, because PlayStation is the brand that everybody talks about, like the mainstream talks about. They're the ones that, you don't hear as much about Xbox anymore. I mean, when Halo was popular, yeah, you did. But now it's even when you go on, social media and see the TikTok reels of people, it's all about the PS5. It's getting a PS5 or playing a PS5 or spending too much time playing PS5. It's the one that's in the consciousness of people that aren't in Nintendo's stuff and all in on Nintendo. But in that same call, there was a comment made about live service games, because Sony's really wanted to pivot to live service games, and it didn't go so well. Video Games Chronicle reports that Sony's chief financial officer says the company will learn from its live service failures, but insists that progress has been made despite them. In a Q&A session following the company's latest financial results, where we also got the console numbers, one caller asked its panel of executives for an update on the current status of PlayStation's live service plan and where it sees the issues when it comes to improving its live service games. Sony CFO Lin Tao replied that despite the negativity surrounding Sony's live service offerings, thanks to the issues with Concord and Marathon, she still believes live service games are worthwhile because they've added a revenue stream that didn't exist for the company 5 years ago. According via an interpreter, Tao said, quote, last year Concord shut down and this year Marathon was postponed, so somewhat negative news has been coming out. But if we look at the past 5 years, 5 years ago live service games were almost non-existent for PlayStation Studios. We now have Helldivers 2, MLB The Show, and Gran Turismo 7, and Bungie's Destiny 2, so we have those four live services contributing to sales and profits in a stable manner, unquote. So I didn't realize that they were considering MLB The Show and Gran Turismo 7 as live service games, because that's not normally what I think of as a live service game. I guess, what constitutes a live service game? Is it one that gets constant DLC updates? Is that what they're saying? I get, MLB The Show because it does have the Ultimate Team aspect, and I get Diamond Team, they've got their version of EA's Ultimate Team where you get the cards and you make a lineup and you play online. I can't remember what it's called. Somebody in chat's gonna remember what that's called. But I didn't realize they also considered Gran Turismo 7, because all Gran Turismo has is they do get like monthly DLC of like three new cars, and then they release new DLC packs. But I guess this is the, you know, they're redefining what a live service game is. And I guess it's doing well for them. Those games, whereas the other stuff are not really. And it's kind of like, I guess they're learning from all of this. Tao had earlier noted during Sony's results presentation that live service games accounted for about 40% of first-party software revenue for the past quarter, and cited this again in her reply. She said via the interpreter, quote, for Q1, the live service ratio is about 40%. For the full year, it's a little less, probably between 20 to 30%. So in terms of the transformation, it's not entirely going smoothly. But from a longer-term perspective, if you look at the changes over 5 years, you see that there's definitely been a change. Of course, we recognize that there are still many issues, so we should learn from the lessons from mistakes and make sure that we introduce live service content where there's less waste and it's more smooth, unquote. I guess maybe the thing is, like, I didn't realize that they considered MLB The Show and Gran Turismo 7 a live service game. That's not what I think of as a live service game. They're games that have multiplayer elements, especially Gran Turismo. Gran Turismo has multiplayer elements, but you play it single player and they just release monthly DLC. And some of it's free and some of it's paid. And I guess that's what they consider a live service game. So maybe that's what it is. You got to introduce it smoother, because Concord and Marathon, I guess people are shying away from. Or I think in the sense of Concord, they were trying to... they wanted it to be a hit out of the gate, and when it wasn't, it wasn't. And then it no longer was going to exist. And I guess that's why MLB The Show and Gran Turismo did better in their eyes, because they were hits right out of the gate because they're established franchises. And while Helldivers 2 is also good, and it was, quote-unquote, an established franchise, Helldivers 1 was nothing like what Helldivers 2 is. So... they're going to keep going at it. They say, oh, we've learned a bunch of lessons. We've laid off all the people that taught us the wrong lessons. And now we're going to move on and we're going to try to do the right lessons. And maybe what it is they're going to just kind of sneak it in to a game that doesn't feel like a live service game to get the people like me to play them. I guess that's what it is. We're blowing through some of these stories tonight because there really wasn't that much this week, other than there was the Nintendo Direct, the Indie Direct, without any Silk Song stuff. You're going to see Silk Song stuff on Xbox presentations, but everybody wanted Silk Song and they didn't get it. But Nintendo, you're not going to see Nintendo at something going on this week, and this is something that is an entity that I haven't been able to work with yet. I could have worked with them this year. I chose not to. Because I didn't fit any of the qualifications. But I work with speedrunning charity events sometimes during the year. And this is one from Japan that had a very interesting announcement. And it's a very, you know, chilling announcement a little bit, because who knows if this is going to happen stateside. I don't think it is. But it absolutely happened there. IGN reports that RTA in Japan, a well-established charity speedrunning contest, has removed Nintendo games from its upcoming Summer 2025 event, which started yesterday, despite showcasing them for the past 9 years. This is because they suddenly received a warning from Nintendo about using games without permission. The nonprofit hopes to feature Nintendo titles again in future events, likely having to lodge individual applications on a per-game, per-event basis. But why has Nintendo suddenly done this now? So, to give you a little bit of context here, first held in 2016, RTA in Japan is a charity speedrunning event. Contestants apply to play through all or part of their chosen game, aiming to break records or just smash their personal best in front of an audience. So that's an interesting way of describing the event. As a result, a huge number of games have been featured in previous events, ranging from NES classics to recent titles. Their upcoming event, RTA in Japan Summer 2025, takes place in Tokyo from August 9th through 15th, with proceeds going to Doctors Without Borders. The lineup includes Cuphead, Castlevania Dracula X, Final Fantasy IX, Silent Hill 2 Remake, and Wadham, to name a few. However, all the Mario and Kirby titles that have been part of the event in previous years are glaringly absent. By the way, there is actually, and the way I was going to be able to be involved is they're actually doing an English restream for the first time. So you can, you actually have English commentators for all the stuff going on in RTA in Japan. So you can go to it right now and you'll see English restreamers. I probably could have gotten in on that. I did, you know, because I'm in those circles. So I saw the calls for applications and stuff like that. But I didn't know any of the games that I could have been there for. To commentate, so I am not part of it, but you can actually now watch it in English, and this is done around the world for other things, like for Games Done Quick, which I do work with. There is the Japanese restream, and it's run by the RTA in Japan folks, where they have Japanese speakers doing commentary over everybody's game. You've got Le French restream, which does it all in French. There's a German restream. There's a Russian restream that right now nobody talks about, but they're around. And so it's a way to kind of expand your audience outside of the native language of whatever the event is. On August 4th, RTA in Japan posted an official announcement on their website explaining exactly why the Summer 2025 event will not feature any Nintendo titles. According to the announcement, Nintendo pointed out to the nonprofit organization on June 13th that organizations require prior permission to use Nintendo games, adding that RTA in Japan's previous use of Nintendo's titles was unauthorized as permission was not obtained in advance. Upon receiving this notification, RTA in Japan began negotiations with Nintendo in the hopes of using the Japanese game giant's titles again for future events. As of August 4th, it is decided that RTA in Japan will apply for permission on a per-event, per-game basis, basically having to ask Nintendo every single time one of their contestants wants to play through a game, even if it has been featured at a previous RTA in Japan event. In their announcement, RTA in Japan revealed that they were unable to establish clear guidelines on this process in time for the Summer 2025 event, hence the decision to omit Nintendo titles this time around. RTA in Japan has also apologized to those who had applied to speedrun Nintendo games for the Summer 2025 and had their hopes dashed. Considering the number of Nintendo titles, including classic games like Super Mario 64 and previous RTA in Japan event lineups, it seems likely that many applicants were disappointed. So, at first glance, this seems like an overprotective Nintendo picking on a small charity event. However, the majority of Japanese-speaking users commenting on the matter via social media took a balanced view of the situation or even sided with Nintendo, with many saying they understood why Nintendo had taken this action now. So, RTA in Japan started off as a small volunteer-run effort, but in the past few years, it has grown into a large public event with major sponsors, and the organizer is now registered as a general incorporated association with all of the bureaucracy and responsibility that brings. The event's growing prominence is likely what made Nintendo sit up and take notice. Some commenters even said RTA in Japan should have been more responsible and proactively taken measures to ensure that they had Nintendo's permission to avoid disruption to speedrun events. So, Tiger Claw says so this is more of a Japan thing. Could something like this eventually happen in the U.S.? It has to be a legal entity. So this is a Japan thing, and even some people are saying that this is really about Japanese trademark law. So, like, we have trademark and copyright law here in the U.S., and it's a mess, and nobody understands it, and nobody wants to really deal with it all that much. But it's even more so in Japan. So, as Sharon Matt says, I can't really fault Nintendo on this, especially since this is widely known in Japan. RTA became a legal entity in 2020, so technically they should have been asking for permission since then. And I wanted to say that, you know, I believe VTubers in Japan have to do the same request process to play Nintendo games on their streams. So VTubers that are based in Japan, in Japanese trademark law, they actually have to get permission to stream the games. Now, notice, Nintendo usually says yes. It really did. Nintendo probably takes a look at your brand, takes a look at, you know, who you are. Do they want to be associated with you? And that's not exactly something they can do in the U.S. as easily. They've tried. They've tried to do some things. There was, you know, them versus all the YouTubers and taking down all that stuff. But they probably have a little bit more resources in Japan to go after legal Japanese entities, which RTA in Japan is, that they don't have in the U.S. And Dark Tetsuya says, I don't know if it's relevant to the story, but I did notice trying to play Nintendo World Championships on Switch that a lot of the speedrun tech is outright banned in the competition. Although it's something, this is probably a different thing. It's just something I noticed. Yes, it's that's just the way that they've decided to do their leaderboards. Yeah, because if you use some of that tech and it glitches out, if you glitch the game, then you've kind of screwed up their leaderboard. So I understand that because they're trying to do leaderboards in the game itself. And Mike Deff says, I know we love to dunk on Nintendo whenever we get the chance, but this is more a Japanese law thing than it is a Nintendo thing. So they're really, kind of protecting Japanese law. But Fifth Dream does say, play our games, don't play our games. That's actually not what Nintendo's saying here. Nintendo's saying, yes, play our games. Don't let others watch you play our games without our permission if you are making money off of it. Because that's the thing, is that when it's volunteers or when it's, you know, somebody small and they're like, you know, maybe making, you know, a couple cents on ads, Nintendo's going to be like, fine, whatever. But when you have major sponsors, you're at a major event in Japan and you're a legal Japanese entity and you're making money, they want to maybe be a part of it. Maybe they want some of that money because their engineers and their developers and their artists and their, they've spent millions of dollars making that game. And, you know, if you look at, you know, film and television, actors get residuals, or did before streaming came along, and that's why they struck in 2013 to kind of fix that. But whenever that TV show or that commercial is aired, that actor does get a couple pennies. The person who wrote it gets a couple pennies. That's how residuals work. And I guess Nintendo in Japan is probably trying to do the same thing, where they're like, well, I mean, if you're going to show our work and make money off of it, we should get a cut. Tireclaw says, keep in mind, Nintendo is a Japanese company first and foremost, so they have a lot of control in Japan. And that's the sensibility they would bring to America when they were going after the YouTubers for a bit, and there was worry that you couldn't stream Nintendo games on Twitch, was because they were a Japanese company, and in Japan, you have to ask permission. You don't ask forgiveness, you ask permission. And they don't have that kind of leverage here in America, which they're kind of upset about. But they do in Japan, and RTA in Japan is a Japanese entity. So that's why it's happening here. Could it happen in America? Could they require Games Done Quick to, you know, run it by them? Absolutely, they could. They haven't yet, but they absolutely could. One of the things that is happening at places like Games Done Quick, and you know, something that you should know, is that there are tournament guidelines in order to run Nintendo games at a tournament. If you want to run a Smash Brothers tournament or a Mario Kart tournament, there are certain guidelines that you have to follow, especially if they're for money. If it is not for money, if they're not paying to be there and you're not giving them money out, Nintendo doesn't care. The guidelines are like, yep, go have a blast. Whatever. But if there is a charge to get into the tournament, which doesn't necessarily mean you're charging to be in the tournament, but, and it's really interesting, there was a panel at Games Done Quick done by an attorney who was part of the volunteer staff, who actually like went through all the legal documents and actually read through all the legalese. And basically, because you have to pay an entry fee to get into Games Done Quick, that counts as having to pay to enter the tournament, because you have to have a badge to get into the convention to be able to enter the tournament. So it fell under the guidelines of a pay-for-play tournament, which meant that, you know, you couldn't make X amount of money on it and things like that. So there are no official Nintendo tournaments at Games Done Quick, which there used to be a Mario Kart tournament every event. There used to be a Smash Brothers tournament every event. You wouldn't see it on stream. It would be, you know, it would be in the tournament room, and it would be for attendees only. But they got rid of all those. They couldn't do those. They legally could not run those because you have to pay like I think badges now are like $115 for the whole week or something like that. You have to pay $115 to get in, which is over the threshold of what Nintendo considers a hobbyist tournament. Tiger Claw says that they would rather do their own tournament than let another entity do it. Smash Brothers used to be an Evo back in the days until Nintendo decided they no longer want the game shown at those events. So they will still allow events, but it has to follow the Nintendo, like what Nintendo of Japan believes the brand believes should be represented. And they probably don't want Smash Brothers next to Mortal Kombat and, you know, bloody games like Mortal Kombat or anything like that, because they believe that their audience will tune into Evo to see Smash Brothers, and then they may be exposed to something that they don't want to be exposed to. But they will work with other entities to run Smash Brothers tournaments, and then Nintendo gets a cut of it. And Dark Tetsuya says Sony owns Evo, but that's not why Nintendo's there. Like, Evo being owned by Sony is not why Nintendo is not in... Nintendo games aren't in Evo. I think part of it is Evo wanted Smash Melee, and Nintendo, in order to do that well, you need third-party stuff, third-party mods that Nintendo doesn't approve of. That's where they kind of draw the line there. That's why you can't have major online tournaments with Smash Brothers Melee, because you need to circumvent some protections that are in Melee, you have to use emulators to be able to play it online. If you can't use, you know, Brawl online anymore, so people emulate the servers, and that's not good. So Nintendo wants everything to be the stock stuff, which means basically just Ultimate. And they don't want you doing anything outside of what they provide in Ultimate. They don't want you using any third-party stuff. And they also want your event to be wholesome. They want your... And when I say wholesome, I mean, you know, able for families to watch and be a part of. And at Evo, I know they've been working a lot on their culture, and the FGC has been working a lot on their culture, but there's a lot of mean-spirited trash talking that still happens in the FGC. And Nintendo probably doesn't want to be around that, because the FGC does celebrate some of that, you know, celebrate some of those, the villains and things like that. Because that's just gaming. That's just the way gaming is. And Nintendo probably doesn't want their stuff next to it. So that's why Nintendo's pretty, wants their image to be upheld. Now, let's go to RTA in Japan. Essentially, there was a time with speedrunning events, and they've gotten better at this, where they were kind of showing the glitches and being like, look how stupid the developers were. They missed this. Which is really the wrong attitude to take. And I haven't heard that sentiment at Games Done Quick. I haven't heard that sentiment in 8 or 9 years. They really cleaned that up before I got involved. They had already started cleaning that up. But somebody else may look at a Nintendo game getting glitched and being like, wow, that must have been really sloppily made in order for that glitch to happen. And it wasn't. It's just, you know, you have to release at some point. And if the glitch doesn't, if you have to do like a super serious sequence of events and button presses at the exact right time to make the glitch, they're not going to spend time fixing it. ZenMonkey11 says Smash Brothers is violent. You have to throw your opponent off a cliff. Oh, there's violence, but it's not, that's not what they're worried about as much, I don't think. But that's why, like, you will always never hear that any of the characters died in Smash Brothers. They didn't die, they just got thrown off a cliff. You notice in Splatoon, you get splatted. You don't die, you get splatted. That's it. You know, so they really try to, you know, use that language and try to steer it that way. Mike Def says cartoon violence. Yes, there's cartoon violence, but nobody dies. It's like the A-Team. Nobody dies. It's like Kiryu in Yakuza series. Nobody dies. They just get beat up to sleep. And when somebody dies, it's like a really big deal. I think Nintendo would love to have that kind of control over, you know, what speedrunning events show things or what is on Twitch all the time. But they can really only control that in Japan. And that's why this has happened. Sean322 says, the boot in Who Framed Roger Rabbit died, got put in the acid. Well, that wasn't Nintendo. That was Disney and Warner Brothers. Esther and Matt says, unpopular opinion as well, which is why I said your name and not mine. The FGC has not been the best community to deal with in terms of toxicity. Granted, they've gotten better in recent years, seemingly, yes. From what I understand, the FGC, there's been a big push to be better. And it's driven some people away, which they're the people you probably didn't want to be around anyway, is probably the way to say that. So, and because I've also seen that in some other spaces where, you know, they're like, oh, I can't be there anymore, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, good, you were the person I didn't want to be around anyway, so I'm kind of glad you're not going anymore. That's happened in multiple different spaces. I'm not calling any specific one out. It's happened multiple times. But, people are working on it. And Tiger Hall says, due to the competitive nature, it can be toxic at times. It's very stressful. I mean, at Evo especially, they're playing for money. Like, that's a lot of money to people. And I don't blame them for getting, you know, super into it and super serious. Because for some of them, this is their livelihood. And they, you know, winning at Evo can make or break their year financially. And I, you know, so there's a lot of pressure and that boils over. So I get that. Anytime money is involved, you get toxicity. So RTA in Japan minus first party Nintendo games. I don't know if that also extends to anything running on a Nintendo system or if it's just Nintendo first party titles. Like, I don't know if can you run Castlevania NES? I haven't looked at the schedule to know that. Not since this came out. RTA in Japan without those, it's going on right now. There is an English restream. I don't have the link on hand, but if you look for RTA in Japan, you'll find it, and the Twitch channel will have it. And that way you can watch the games and listen to commentary in English, and I'll tell you how they ran. As Jerry Matt says, they can run super multitasking, which was made by a friend of the show, YYR. And RTA in Japan is actually where super multitasking was run, I believe, last year. Somebody ran through the speedrun challenges of it. And if they were doing the English restream, I probably would have applied to commentate for it. But I don't think it's there this year. And it's gone around on Blue Sky. But how the restreams work, at least how Games Done Quick does their restreams, is that if you do apply to restream, they do want you to have some knowledge of the game, but then the actual runners will provide a form. They get asked like a questionnaire, and they're like, you know, so you can be prepared to talk about the tricks or the skips. And a lot of times, like, some of the GDQ runners get very, very detailed at, like, this is how this trick works, this is how this trick works. That way, the restreamers can explain it in their language to their audience. And so I've got to believe that RTA in Japan is doing it the same way, because they handled the Japanese restream of American of GDQ and ESA and RPG Limit Break and the others that are primarily English based. So even though you're getting English commentators that aren't there, they're doing it from their rooms, you are still getting somebody that's knowledgeable about what's happening in the run and can explain it to you. So it's really interesting. I know a lot of people that are being a part of it in the other circles that I run in. I just couldn't do it this time around. There was nothing that I really wanted to be able to do this time around, but maybe next year, maybe next time, because I think they do multiples of these a year, because this is summer 2025, so maybe they do a winter one. Maybe I'll be doing one of these stuff like that. So Nestor Matt says Cuphead and ET 2600 kicked off the event, and that's the thing. I probably could have done ET. Because I do know, like, and I actually genuinely like ET for the 2600. It was just at 5 a.m. And I wasn't going to get up for it this time. Someone is running Wizardry later. Yeah, that's cool. Well, Wizardry is huge in Japan. So, as Sharon and Matt brings up Wizardry, which is an old computer RPG, CRPG, from the 80s. But it, even though it was made in America, it was the catalyst for all JRPGs. It was the inspiration for Dragon Quest. It was the inspiration for the first Final Fantasy. It was the inspiration for all of those. It was Wizardry, which is why Wizardry is not really well known in America, even though it was made here, but it is legendary in Japan. And that's why Digital Eclipse even made their re-release, a remake of Wizardry, to celebrate that, because it is such a cultural thing in Japan, and we here in America don't know that much about it. It was here, like, we had heard of it, but it wasn't a big deal. We were more into, like, Ultima. It was kind of the bigger deal here in America, but Wizardry was really what took off in Japan. It's cool. You'll see what kind of cultural touchstones they have out there that aren't Nintendo, and maybe next time they'll be able to get some Nintendo games. We are going to take a very quick music break, and we'll then talk to Rob, and I'll talk about one of the games that I played this week on that's now out on Switch and Switch 2. We'll talk about that in just a little bit after this break. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show and the Voice Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork.
Hey, this is Breakman, and you're listening to the Bobby Blackwell Show live on VogNetwork.com. Feedback not included.
I didn't think that music break was that bad. But Breakman's not here, so he can't defend himself for sending in that bumper. But if you want to send in a bumper, you also don't have to be here when it is played. All you got to do is send me an MP3 with just your voice, or a video with just your voice. I will choose which DMCA violation to put behind it, saying that you're coming back to the Bobby Blackwell Show. I should probably say that, speaking of that, we're not going to be here. And we're not going to be here in a couple weeks. Here, Labor Day weekend, so the first weekend of September, I'm not going to have a live show. I will be at Dragon Con. I would love to tell you what I'm going to be doing at Dragon Con. I can't tell you yet. The list has not been put out yet, so maybe next Sunday I'll be able to tell you what I'm doing at Dragon Con. I am really looking forward to some of the people I get to meet and some of the people I get to talk to. I get to interview some people on stage. There's a great gaming one that I'll be able to talk about. And I can't reveal it yet. I don't even want to run the risk of one of my bosses at Dragon Con listening and being like, you shouldn't have said that. You're not going to get to talk to that person anymore, so I'm not even going to try. So, but I will say the one thing I can actually talk about is because we are working with the Digital Media Track. We are doing a networking mixer where you can meet other content creators or meet us on Thursday night. So that is the first night of Dragon Con. Thursday is the new Friday. It runs from Thursday to Monday is what Dragon Con runs through. And Thursday night, you can even get a one-day membership for Thursday for like $35 if you're in the area, if you're in the Atlanta area. So it's one-day memberships are available now, and that's how much it is to get there on Thursday. Now it's a little bit more for the whole weekend or for a Saturday-only badge or something like that. So yeah, and we'll be posting in the conventions Discord. That's been the Discord channel for conventions. Mari Rin has been posting things because Mag West was this weekend. California Extreme was a couple weekends ago. So there's that. I do want to mention this before because I've got a little bit of time here real quick. First off, now this was posted in our Discord tonight. Tiger Claw's in chat. I don't know if this is true or not. It is from Reddit, which means you never know, but the Battlefield 6 beta is going on. The open beta is going on right now. And one of the things that they do in a lot of these, you know, multiplayer games like this is they put anti-cheat software to make it a little bit more even. There's still aimbots everywhere. It doesn't really help. But the way they do that now is it's kernel level anti-cheat software where it sits in the kernel. And it's like it then scans the stuff that's going on to see if you're running something. And apparently, allegedly, Battlefield 6 actually says in order to play Battlefield 6, you need to install conflicting software. And it's actually saying Valorant, the Riot Games first-person shooter, in the League of Legends universe. So I don't know if this is something that is actually happening, but what I'm probably thinking is that Valorant's anti-cheat living in the kernel is conflicting with Battlefield 6's anti-cheat that's living in the kernel. And so Battlefield 6 thinks you're trying to cheat because you have this other program installed that it believes is a cheat. Is this actually true? I don't know if that's actually true. I thought it was funny. There is a screenshot here, and I don't know how true this screenshot is. But I figured I'd say that, I'd bring it up, because it did just get posted in our Discord. So take that for a grain of salt, but I can absolutely see that happening, where there's so many different anti-cheat things that live in the kernel at kernel level, which is basically like the lowest level it can in your operating system. And eventually they're going to think that you're cheating off each other. I mean, OBS Studio that I use to stream sometimes gets flagged as a cheat in some of these things. So sometimes you can't even run OBS because they're trying to stop, you know, overlays and things like that as well. I will say that the game that I've been teasing for a little bit, that I've been playing a little, that's now out on Switch, is a game called UFO 50. And this is, imagine if the old Action 52 cartridge that we've all heard about actually contained good games. It's made by a bunch of different indie developers, but the head developer is the one who made Spelunky. And it's essentially 50 games about that were all, quote unquote, made in the 80s by a company called UFO Soft. And it's a chronology of, like, this was their first game in 1982 up until they disbanded in 1989. And essentially the lore, there is actually like lore that ties all this together. There's things you learn about the company as you play. But basically they found all these games in a box in somebody's garage when they passed away that were used to work on UFO 50. And they've preserved them. And that's what's come out here. And it's they've got a whole bunch of different types of games on there. They've got apparently a 20-hour JRPG that's kind of in that 8-bit style, but they've got, you know, Metroidvanias, they've got tower defense, they've got, you know, golf games and sports games, and they've got an idle game that's like idle and adventure and things like that. So it came out on Thursday, and it was announced as like in the sizzle reel of the Indie Direct that UFO 50 was out. It was in my Steam wish list, but it's like one of those, like, it's really like a pick up and play. Like a lot of these games are pick up and play for just a little bit. So I wanted to play it handheld, and I don't have a Steam Deck. This would be probably the first game I would get. If I got a Steam Deck, I would be like, yes, that's the game I'm going to get. But they released on Switch, so now I've got one less reason to get a Steam Deck, unfortunately, because I can just play it on Switch. But I actually did stream the first 10 games and like another game going through in chronological order, the first 10 games. And I streamed on my personal channel, and there were some UFO 50 super fans that found the channel and were kind of giving tips and have me, you know, try a later game and things like that. And we're, you know, so that was kind of cool. I may try to do some more of that. I've resisted playing it more, just because I haven't really had much time, and maybe I want to experience a lot of these for the first time on the air. So maybe I'll be doing that a little bit more this week. Coming up next here on the Voice Geeks Network at twitch.tv/VogNetwork is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than I do. And we like to check in with them once I find the voice chat stuff and find everything scrolled differently here. And we like to check in with them. Dark Tatsuya says, I never got around to this one on Steam, but I'll look for it on Switch. Yeah, it's out now. I think it's like $25 right now, which is, I think, what it also is on Steam. Sacramento, are you there?
I'm here, Bobby. How are you?
I am doing well. Have you ever checked out UFO 50?
I haven't, but I did. I was lurking in your stream a little bit. I just wasn't chatting, but I was looking at it. And so the little concept of all the kind of retro, I don't know, more like ZX Spectrum looking mini games, it looked kind of neat. I could see why the game has its fans, because I saw in the chat, I was like, oh, these new people are coming in and telling Bobby what to do. They must be friends of the developer or just, you know, people that play the game a lot. So, yeah, but it looked neat.
It's been out for like a year. I think it's been out for like a year on Steam. So it's got like it's got its user base. And like I said, it's the same developer that did Spelunky. So it's like even he has and like some of the other indie devs. I can't remember what else they've done, but like they're well known. They've done some well-known games. And it was like, hey, if you could make a game that feels like it came out in the 80s, you know, what would you do? And like little small games. And like there are a couple games in there that are apparently worth the price of admission of $25. Like they're worth $25 by themselves.
Yeah, that's good.
So, yeah, Mike Def says it got nominated for some awards at the Game Awards last year. So
did
and,
it?
Yeah.
I must have missed that. Maybe and, in the smaller categories that aren't as chatted about.
Yeah.
Fifth Dream, ones they run through quickly.
Yeah. Yep. Fifth Dream says he loved it when he got it. Haven't played it a lot since. Mike Def does say there's going to be a physical version done by Fangamer, but that's coming out in 6 months. So I didn't want to wait another 6 months for it. But there is apparently a guide, a strategy guide, or like something that's going to look like a strategy guide, because the idea of this is one of those like, oh, there's lore behind this company that went up against, basically they went up against Nintendo and lost, and everybody forgot about them. Like, it's one of those we unconsciously just forgot that they existed, and but they were very popular at the time. And the games were 80s hard, but it's kind of in the sense of, well, we didn't recover the instruction manuals. We only recovered the games, so good luck. You know, whereas in the 80s, they actually had instruction manuals and were not as hard.
And if you actually read them, you'd know you should start on game 4 if you want to actually be able to play the game.
Yes,
yeah.
Which, had I been on the English restream of E.T., for RTA in Japan, I absolutely would have told that because they're playing on game 1 in RTA in Japan for ET. So yeah, I guess, you know, what else is going on? And this seemed like a light news week a little bit, I guess, only because of the Indie Direct and
a little bit. There's a few things going on other places. You were talking about the fan gamer release of the game coming out in 6 months, and I was going to quip, well, is it a digital key card? Because obviously, you know, those are getting a lot of heat from various people on the Switch, too. And Nintendo actually put out a survey about the whole thing, which does show that they're kind of interested, I think, in what's going on.
Yeah.
Although the survey didn't last very long before they pulled it, basically saying we've got enough responses. Although it also says to me that probably that survey ended up on some, you know, various discords, and maybe a lot of the responses were pretty heavily slanted one way, as things tend to do on the internet.
Yeah.
So that could be part of the reason. But it's interesting to see that they are they're even asking questions about it. It shows that it's something that's being discussed.
Were you able to take the survey?
No.
Okay,
no,
so
no.
I was, because I saw it before it got passed around, before everybody else got to it. So I actually took it. Unfortunately, I couldn't answer the way that I wanted to, because they did not ask you any free-form questions. So they would ask you things like, what would you buy a physical version? Would you buy a digital version? Why do you prefer physical? And all of their responses were, well, it makes it, they may become cheaper, or I can sell it, or I can, you know, blah, 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 or I like to collect. Not a single answer was, I have a monthly data cap and can't download every game I own. That was not an option. And I think it's because data caps are a foreign concept everywhere outside the U.S.
You're probably right.
And so they don't think that's an answer. But that's my answer, is even though right now I don't have a monthly data cap, I pay extra to not have a data cap, it is still a concern, and I'm still going to speak up for the people that don't pay extra every month to not have a data cap. And it's not even an option. And I've noticed that multiple times. Even it was... I think 10 years ago or something, there was like Xbox was going around to like doing these events locally. And I went to the Xbox event in Atlanta, and I was like, yeah, I'm, you know, and it was when they were starting to phase out disc games and things like that. And they're like, oh, well, why would you want a physical game? Like, it's blah, blah, blah. And I mentioned the data cap to the person that was from Xbox there, and it blew their minds. Like, they're like, oh. And I'm like, yeah. This game is 80 gigs, and that's a lot. And that was a lot 10 years ago for a game. Like, now Call of Duty's 150, 200 gigs, that's a fifth of people's data cap for the entire month just to get that game. And that's why I always got physical. And that's never an option in these surveys.
And that's not the greatest design, because then it sort of, you know, funnels your answers down into things that might not be particularly relevant. I'm assuming they're going to have, you know, 10, 20,000 people that are answering the survey, and they don't have to parse a bunch of written comments to be able to figure out what people are saying. But that, to be fair, that's one of the places where AI is getting used now, is, you know, combine like answers together and tell me how many there are, you know, as a start, not as a finish, but, you know, it helps you sift through 20,000 responses, and I think would probably get you a better product at the end of the day than what they're getting now, where they don't allow people to really give the reason.
Yeah. And their reasons that they did give you, and it was like a multiple choice. You could choose all of them. You could choose none of them. But if you chose none of them, it didn't tell you, like, well, why? You know, there was no other.
Yeah.
But it was mostly
clearly you're going to be in the minority.
It was basically, I want to spend less money. Like, they were trying to get to it. Do you really only like physical because it could be cheaper for you, or you could make money on it? Like, is that really why? Like, that's really why. That's why you like physical. Well, that's how it really felt.
What's the problem with that? Also, that's a valid reason to want physical, you know, and I've said this for a long time. People want that sort of, you know, that investment that a cartridge can have, especially in this day and age of, you get all these side by side stories about classic Nintendo cartridges that go for six figures, you know, just because of the rarity of it. Now, I doubt a lot of the games today would go for six figures, but you never know. Like, I remember probably the rarest thing I ever have that, like, and I've told this story before, and it's a facepalm moment, and people asking me, how could you get rid of that? I didn't know what the hell it was worth at the time. I had a Rule of Rose promo disc for PlayStation 2, and you know that game is like impossible now to find because of some of the themes in it. I had a promo disc for that. So it's that's just lost to time. But again, you don't know the value of that stuff, so, you know, it is what it is. So you know, I think there's legitimacy to people wanting the value in the physical game.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, all the other reasons too. So they shouldn't funnel it just into a few reasons.
Yeah. That, and, you know, one of the things they did have, one of the answers they did have is, I'd rather not buy a micro SD card right now. That was one of the, like, storage space, you know, because they did ask, like, have you bought a micro SD card? Why have you? Why haven't you? You know, and stuff. So they do that answer is on there. Like, I, you know, because if a game is on the cartridge, it's actually loading from the cartridge, where Xbox and PlayStation move the entire game to the hard drive. So it doesn't really matter. But on Nintendo, like, yes, that, you know, 20 gig game is not on your micro SD card. It is now, or on the storage, it's on the cartridge. And that is something I did check. I'm like, yes, that's one of the reasons I like physical.
Yeah.
So, and game key cards don't have that. So.
Well, we'll see if Nintendo changes any direction with that, or at least with the third parties. But I don't see it happening anytime soon. I feel like the plans are out there for the next few months. And now, you know, we have to worry about the tariff stuff on top of everything else going on. So I think that's just going to push even more people to digital, which I bet probably wasn't even a question or wasn't even a thing on your survey.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that changes the things soon.
What else are you going to be talking about on Orange Lounge Radio tonight?
The return of a music game company from years ago, albeit a different form, but definitely something that catches our eye, being that our roots are in music gaming. So we'll talk a little bit about that, and we'll talk a little bit about an update on the Evercade. I have one of these Evercade arcade machines behind me, and we have some interesting cartridges on the way, so we'll talk about that as well. Lots of stuff coming up tonight on OLR, so stay tuned.
All right, Orange Lounge Radio is coming up next. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thanks as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here at the Voice Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us and interact with the show directly. Or you can find me on Twitch at Bobby Blackwolf, Blue Sky at BobbyBlackwolf.com, or on our Discord server, VogNetwork.com/Discord. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone the show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet, but we would not be able to make this live show work without the help of the chatters to go above and beyond. You being here is really all we ask for, but those who do go above and beyond help us pay, keep the lights on, which is really all we're trying to do. We're not trying to make a lot of money off this, but paying the legal fees to not get in trouble, That's always a plus. Thank you so much, Pod Culture, for resubscribing. Dark Tetsuya resubscribed, said happy 55 month subiversary plus 40 in a row. Thank you so much for that. Sean322 cheered 200 bits and just said hype. S. Chernomat resubscribed for the 69th time. Nice. And Dark Sakura resubscribed for 77th time. Thank you so much for that. I know my resubscription's hitting, it already hit, so I get to share that soon. But thank you so much for being here. And I will see you next week. Hopefully I'll be able to tell you what I'm going to be doing at Dragon Con. I just can't tell you yet. I really want to, but I'm not going to. I will see you next week. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.